Jeepers fucking creepers. What a shit pinata. That was like... It was like the most Roy thing I have ever seen. It's like I got a quart of Roy injected into my eyeballs.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the sweet smell of Succession, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen, and joining me, as always, she is editor-at-large at primetimer.com and the co-host of Extra Hot Great, Tara Ariana. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm a little bit tired. It's been a long week, but you know what's going to perk me right up? Talking about another episode of Succession.
I don't know if this episode is like a hot cup of coffee for you. It's another rough one, but we must do it.
I mean, I'm starting to feel very guilty whenever you're subjected to an episode that's very challenging to watch. I mean, let me ask you this. You've been a fan of some seasons of the American version of The Office, right?
Yeah, sure. Of course. Yes.
I mean, I feel like I'm reminded of like some of the more excruciating scenes from that show, you know, this season when I'm watching.
Yeah, absolutely. Season, yeah. I'm not scared of cringe comedy. It's just, you know, this is rough stuff. It's
it is so much cringe that you're like in pain, physical pain. You know, that's the kind of cringe it is, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Where you have to cover your eyes because you know something terrible is coming and then it is here and you can't avoid it.
Indeed. Hey, Tari, remember how last week I was saying to you how I felt like, man, I really wish they would pick things up with the Shiv subplot in this show.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I got my wish this week, you know?
You did.
I feel like
it was a monkey's paw-esque
answer to my prayers.
Yeah.
So in any case, let's get into this episode, season two, episode 5. Oh, actually, before we begin, do want to say you can find more episodes of this show at successionpodcast.com and always email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're enjoying the show, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever your fine podcasts are downloaded. It does help us to stand out a little bit. All right, let's get to the episode, Turnhaven. Tara, what happens in this
Okay.
episode?
Well, the Roy's overtures to Rhea have been successful enough for the Pierces to extend an invitation to their country house, Turnhaven, as a kind of chemistry test. The Pierces have questions about the Roy's moral character. Shiv is nervous to the point of twitchiness about whether this will be the moment Logan announces her as his successor, but tells Tom not to ask her about it, seemingly because she is scared to entertain the thought. And maybe it's her nerves that make her express, again, her qualms about making the Pierce deal, this time not because she's concerned about the future of journalism, but because there's a lack of leadership at Pierce, and we later hear revenues have been down for the past 8 quarters. But that she does it in front of Logan is so dumb that knowing how things end, not quite a spoiler, but it's hard not to read it as subconscious self-sabotage that she later has to walk back.
It's interesting how Shiv has behaved about the Pierce deal overall. I think that her approach seems to be kind of random sniping at it, you know what I mean? As opposed to mm-hmm. fully on board or strenuously arguing against. And it doesn't feel like an approach that Logan Roy would respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think certainly Logan's more of like an unquestioning loyalty type of guy. It's surprising to me that Shiv doesn't realize that or doesn't let that inform her actions. In a recent episode, Roman referred to Logan Roy as a human Saudi Arabia who just does whatever the hell he wants. And it seems like if that's the case, you know, which I don't know that that's an unfair description other than being mildly racist. But it's something that Shiv would be well suited to get on board with if she wants to take over the company. Anyway, so
yeah, you could make the argument maybe that she hasn't worked for Logan before, but it's not like she doesn't know him. Like is his daughter. Like presumably she has picked up some information over the years of being his child about like what he's like temperamentally that she could reasonably extrapolate to what it's like to work for him.
Yeah. So I think your kind of description that it's nerves is probably a good one. You know, that like
mm-hmm.
for that character to make more sense, the idea that she would be really nervous and wanting to like impress by showing off her wit and that backfiring in some ways, it feels very plausible to me.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that this episode begins and ends with Shiv's perspective. The show doesn't really do that very much, but you have a lot of close-ups of Shiv arriving at the house, Most of the episode, the scenes involve Shiv in some way, with the exception of the Kendall-Naomi romance. Mm-hmm. And the episode kind of ends with a point of view shot of Shiv looking at Logan, you know, going up the stairs. And so, I do think this is kind of a rare episode that really is focused on Shiv's journey, and you get it right at the beginning here when she's kind of, you know, mixing it up with her family members. So,
yeah, she's so rattled. I mean, this is definitely the most jittery we've ever seen her.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, we realize why later is, right, because she concludes how much she really wants it, right? And I don't think Shiv is somebody who is used to feeling very attached to things or people. You know, and when she finally experiences it, it's difficult for her to know how to handle it. So,
yeah, I mean, I think we've said this in past episodes, but it sort of seems like at some point before the start of the series, she gave up on the idea, if she ever had it, of being brought into the company.
Yeah.
And then when the opportunity was presented to her, like, it's so much what she wants that she doesn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely what you see play out this episode. So, happens next?
So the Roys all get strict instructions from Frank, who's friends with the Pierces, on how to behave. They are not to discuss hot topics like Ravenhead, the Nazi from ATN, ATN itself, Israel, or rumors about Bright Star and cruises, nor are they to drink too much. And Logan quietly tells Kendall in a euphemistic way that he shouldn't do any drugs during the visit. So it seems like obviously Logan knows that Kendall's using again, but it's like, what are you going to do? Yeah. Or he doesn't care as long as Kendall is still functioning. Or it serves his purposes for Kendall to be using and thus more controllable. Who knows? Anyway, the Roys are encouraged to talk about art and culture, which, given that Shiv is supposed to be the most palatable Roy and she thinks Waystar should stop making independent movies, will be a challenge. Because the Pierces hate ATN and Waystar's newspapers, Tom is told he will be the scapegoat for all of those businesses' sins. But this is a make-or-break summit in that acquiring Pierce is going to be Waystar's defense in the proxy war. And before we get into that, interesting to me that Tabitha gets to come, but Willa doesn't. I mean, I wonder if they assume the Pierces are, you know, rich enough and connected enough to know what Willa used to do before she was trying to get a play up.
Yeah. Whereas Tabitha feels like, well, Tabitha also has a connection with Naomi, right? So
yes,
that's another reason why they might have included her. Maybe they thought that she could be strategically useful as well in a way that Willa might not be able to be. So
true, although we find out when Naomi shows up that she wasn't expected to come.
Fair enough.
Anyway, Logan is counting on Rhea to help midwife the deal, to Shiv's alarm, given that Rhea doesn't work for Waystar. And when the Roys arrive at Turnhaven, Rhea lets Logan know, as I said, that the famous Naomi has surprised everyone by flying in from Marin, which complicates the math in terms of getting the Roys all the yeses they need for the sale to happen. It's established that she's very close to Nan, who's the matriarch. We'll get into her shortly. Things kick off with a cocktail party where Roman immediately forgets his instructions, trying to translate a Latin inscription.
This wine is triumphant? No. Your vagina trumpets.
I triumph in the truth.
Oh, right, of course, truth. Love it. It's the best, right? Truth. He seems cool.
Shiv doesn't do much better, mocking another cousin named Mark for pursuing his second PhD, while Connor picks a fight with Maxim about politics. And I feel like we're supposed to be tracking how much Shiv undermines herself by getting too familiar too fast with people and unleashing her very nasty sense of humor on people that she doesn't know well enough to get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty painful to watch when your sense of humor doesn't jive with someone else's. And I do think, like, the personality clash is very evident even right from the start.
For sure.
I did enjoy Rhea and Logan's interaction when she says, yeah, Naomi's here, could complicate the deal. And Logan says something like, why didn't I know about this? And she's like, because it's not my fucking job,
you know,
which, like, go Rhea, you know, she's mm-hmm. not like reporting to Logan in any capacity, and she really owns that. So enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, it's good. So the matriarch of the Pierce family is Nan, played by Cherry Jones, as a cartoonish, old money limousine liberal, bragging on the length of the Pierce legacy and showily asking Rosa, the head of her house staff, to have a drink with the guests. Logan has Kendall arrive an hour later than everyone else so that Logan can tell Nan the reason is that Kendall was doing volunteer work, which surely Logan doesn't think that she buys that.
Yeah. So one of the things I really enjoy about your recaps, Tara, and doing the show with you is like you help to illuminate things about the show that I wouldn't have necessarily thought of or reflected on. And referring to Nan as a cartoonish old money limousine liberal, great turn of phrase, but also like not, I think it's true. I just didn't, I didn't seize upon that idea immediately when I watched it. Like, what were the reasons why you described her that way?
I mean, well, the asking Rosa to have a drink when she knows that she can't, like Rosa says, I'm in the middle of making dinner. But I also feel like that's very performative. Like she's doing that for the Roy's benefit. Like, look how much we respect the people who work for us in our house. We don't treat them like servants. We treat them like family. Look, I'm asking her to have a drink, even though she knows she's not going to.
Yeah.
Like that just felt very, it felt very considered. And the point of this, of all of this is supposed to be like the contrast between the old money Pierces and the new money Roys. Like the Pierce legacy, we're told either in this episode or it might have been the last one, that it goes back 150 years. So I think I said they're like the Sulzbergers, but they're probably more like the Hearsts in that the person who initially made all the this family's money has been dead for a long time. Like these are many generations of descendants that are still living on this, the prestige of this name, whereas the Roys, the person who made that money is still alive. His name is Logan.
Right.
And so, you know, I think the Pierces are very much like in love with their image as the stewards of this legacy. And, you know, with all the, like the Latin inscription over the library and like the old, even the old recipe for the scotch or whatever the booze they're drinking, might be bourbon. And we'll get to it, but like making Naomi recite a Shakespeare passage instead of doing a blessing for the dinner. Like all of it is just so, I get it. And you know,
it's a little extra, as it were.
It's so extra. And every time they show Logan rolling his eyes, it's like, he's not wrong. This all is very, it's such a performance that, you know, it's meant to put the Roys on their heels, but it's gross.
To me, actually, the parallel that came to mind was the Bancrofts selling the Wall Street Journal to Rupert Murdoch. Because the Bancrofts also have like a legacy going back many, many, many decades.
Yeah.
Although that sale was something like $5 billion. It was like way, way less in terms of magnitude than this. But it did remind me of kind of like old money coming in touch with, you know, conservative, relatively new money. So I thought that was an interesting parallel to reflect on as well. So
yeah.
So what else happens during this cocktail party?
So I mean that's pretty much the cocktail party in a nutshell. Before dinner, Logan drags everyone into his suite to scold them for their various fuck ups, which all of them did. When they've all left, Logan gives Marsha what he thinks is a compliment on her performance, but she doesn't appreciate his treating her as just another one of his pupils.
So I think this scene with Logan is great. And by the way, this is basically, if you were to rewind David Chen's life 10 to 15 years, this is basically what is going on in the inside of my head if I'm at a job fair. You know, it's like, dude, you smile too much at this person. That person doesn't like jokes. Why did you do that? You know, like, it's very like, you need to be, in some situations, you need to be extremely calculated about how you're interacting with people. And naturally, as humans, we mess that up. And it was fun to see Logan really tear into every single one of his children for the various indignities that they suffered, large and small.
Yeah, but at the same time, you get the sense that like Logan doesn't have to think about his behavior almost ever.
Yeah.
And so being put in this position where he's supposed to be ingratiating himself to these people that he has so much contempt for and who have contempt for him as well, like that's the other part of everyone's behavior is that all of this is fake. You know, like this, the purpose of this isn't really to make these two families friends. You know, it's for the Pierces to decide, are the Roys so gross that we can't stand to take their money?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, before we get to the main event of this episode, we got to thank some people who helped to make this podcast possible, people who contributed to our Kickstarter and supported us at the tier where they could get a shout out on the podcast. We are so grateful for everyone who contributed. Thanks to Brandon Tate, Linda Dills, Nora Landon, Vittorio, Mike Constantino, Daniel Lehman, and Patty. Thanks so much for your contributions to the Kickstarter.
Thanks also to Jennifer Anderson, Chris Gibson, Juan Pablo, and Heather Todd. Thanks to all of you, and thanks to everyone who contributed to the Kickstarter. We love you all.
Yes, you guys are awesome. Thanks so much. All right, so the dinner scene. You know, dinner scenes generally go badly in this show. I think. It's like dinner scenes in Succession, wedding scenes in Game of Thrones. It's a common thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I watching it, I felt like it was much longer than it was. Oh, it takes up a quarter of the episode, which is still a lot. But I would have, if someone had asked me, how long is the dinner scene? I would have said 45 minutes.
Yes.
Not because it drags, but just because it's so painful. It's excruciating to watch.
It's a thing where, you know, watching it on HBO now, I had to pause it and come back to, because I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. oh, like my level of discomfort has been topped up. Like I need to like pause, walk, like take a little walk and then come back to it when I feel ready to return to it. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to go do some jumping jacks and get this feeling to go away.
Yes,
yeah. Okay.
Right.
So what makes it brutal starts with Nan, as I mentioned earlier, having Naomi open the meal with, instead of a blessing, a few verses of Shakespeare. And Naomi chooses a passage from Richard II about reputation. Kendall compliments Naomi in his usual very awkward, stiff, weird way. And she quickly lets him know that she's aware of his addiction, not by his reputation, as he tries to tie it in with her quotation, but because, Naomi says, she can tell that he's an addict. Peter, another cousin, asks Roman what he's currently reading. Roman invents a novel called The Electric Circus, which yet another cousin named Marnie immediately Googles and says she can't find. Then Shiv finds a lag in the conversation to tell Mark she actually thinks it's awesome that he's getting another PhD. And I just want to break in at this point and say, etiquette is about making guests feel comfortable. And what Nan and the other Pierces do is a phony performance of good manners that's intended to trap the Roys, which, of course, the crass new money Roys are too clumsy not to fall into. But I just wanted to note the Pierces are every bit as tacky. It's just in a different way.
Mm. Well, I think that's a fair observation. I think one of the things that makes this scene so painful is, when you think about, first of all, it does last quite a while, right? And even though it's just a quarter of the episode, like, that is pretty long for a dinner scene in any show, right? Mm-hmm. And generally, TV shows have, like, a certain rhythm. And when, like, scenes go on for longer than, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, the audience can feel it. Like, they feel that there's something kind of significant about this scene, and it's kind of uncomfortable when you're in a place for too long, particularly when the dialogue is so uncomfortable and like clearly very awkward. I think the moment when Roman makes up the novel and that whole thing plays out, first of all, reminded me a lot of Peep Show. That's totally something the characters of Peep Show would do. And what's great about it is, in a normal situation, in a normal episode of a TV show, you might cut away from that. You might be like, oh, Electric Circus, and she's like, let me Google that. Cut away to something else. And what's amazing about this scene is it does not cut away. It just lets these things continue to play out, and as a viewer, you're like, please cut away. Like, I don't want to see how this plays out, and it does not cut away. You know, I mean, it there's cuts, there's edits, but it leaves you in the moment with the characters in that discomfort, and it's excruciating.
But it also shows like the kind of air that all of these characters get to breathe by being rich. Because in a normal situation, if someone's like, I'm reading this book called The Electric Circus, you wouldn't Google it in front of them. Like, you might Google it later if you were curious, but you wouldn't be like, you just made that up, essentially, which is what Marnie did.
Yeah.
Like, that's it's just not something that in normal social circumstances any of us would do, because it's rude, first of all. But like, Roman makes up the novel because he's used to being surrounded by people who aren't going to call him on that stuff.
Right.
And Marnie Googles it because she doesn't care if he thinks that she's rude, you know?
Their status is equal. right? So she can call him out on it without any fear of reprisal. Because if he's like, well, I'm going to sue you or do something stupid like that, she has almost as many resources that she can deploy, or, you know, comparable resources, right?
So, right, but it's clearly not a situation where anyone's going to get sued. Like, she's just trying to make him – he's trying to make himself feel big by making it seem like he reads. Yeah. And she's trying to make him feel small by letting him know she knows he doesn't.
In some ways, this conversation reminds me a little bit of this whole Brett Stevens fiasco that occurred on Twitter a few weeks ago, right? Yeah. So for those who don't know, Brett Stevens is an op-ed columnist at the New York Times, and a professor at, I think it was George Washington University, tweeted a story about the New York Times that reported that the New York Times had bed bugs. And this professor said, Brett Stevens is a bed bug. And apparently Brett Stevens has like a Twitter alert or something for his name, because this guy didn't like tag Brett Stevens or anything like that.
Mm-mm.
And then Brett Stevens emailed this guy, CC'd this guy's boss, the university provost, and tried to get him in trouble for calling Brett Stevens a bed bug on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
That exploded and went super viral, and like everyone knew about it, and Brett Stevens quit Twitter in protest. But the original professor had some really fascinating things to say about what Brett Stevens was trying to do. He was trying to exercise power over his lessors, because he conceived this guy as a lesser. He's like, I'm from the New York Times, you're not. I get to tell on you, and like you get to cower before me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this reminded me of, like this conversation about Roman and making up things. Is like, he's probably used to people. Actually, no, he is used to people cowering before him. We've seen that before in the show, mm-hmm. right? Like when he threatened to annihilate his personal trainer in season one, he's in a situation where that doesn't happen now.
Yeah.
Where people don't cower before him, where people aren't his lessers, and it leads to something really uncomfortable. So,
So of the Roys, only Tom plays his role as directed, cheerfully calling himself a right-wing ogre, and which permits Logan to say in front of everyone that if the acquisition goes through, Tom might not remain head of news, Reed will not. This seems to surprise Tom, but surely anyone could have seen this coming. Like, I can't believe that even Tom is at this point so delusional that he thinks that Shiv would insulate him from this.
Well, I think that Tom has a very poor sense of other people's regard for him, including his wife. You know, it just seems like to a significant extent, he's oblivious about where he stands. I mean, until season 2, episode 2, I think, you know, he still thought he had a chance at the throne, right?
Right.
And so it just feels like he's generally kind of an oblivious, kind of a hapless character, devoid of hap. This sequence where he both is surprised and talks to Shiv about things reveals that. Yeah.
Yeah, so. It's true. Well, the break in the action from the dinner party is not much of a break, because it's just Tom and Shiv making up a dog emergency so that they can go out in the hall and Tom can beg Shiv to be kind to him in front of the family while she waves him off because she's in her head about how to impress Logan. And then it's back to the dinner of high stakes social gamesmanship. Tabitha announces that she and Roman don't have sex and are like eunuch besties, which he embarrassedly denies. Nan asks Marsha about growing up in Beirut, and Marsha talks over Logan, suggesting that he's not interested in her past and accepting another glass of wine against instructions. Nan then leads the way into a minefield, asking whom Logan plans to name as his successor. And this clip is kind of long, but it must be heard to be believed.
There is a name, but you know, I really don't like to deal in hypotheticals.
Oh, he's an enigma.
Well, one day.
Oh, what a tease, folks. Just whisper it in my ear.
You know, I'll start to think I'm not wanted.
No, for fuck's sake, Dad, just tell him it's going to be me.
Is that so?
That is so.
Roman, what's happening?
My life just ended.
It's been discussed, but I don't think we're quite at the point where...
No, not anytime soon. We've discussed the transition and some arrangements.
We won't bore you.
No, but I thought we could tell you all, though, as friends.
Yeah. You know, maybe this dinner was a little bit premature. Seems like you guys are still working some things out.
No, Peter, don't worry. This is just family hijinks as usual. We're good.
Is that true?
Will you stop?
Okay, I just have after this in my notes, endless screaming, because, I mean, this was the part I had to cover my eyes. Like, Shiv, why would you do this?
Yeah, so what are you hoping Shiv's going to do in this case, you know? Because on some level, when she said it, I was kind of like, you know what? Good for her, you know? She's really going for it, Tara. She's really going for it. But what was your reaction? Like,
No, it's not her place to say that. Mm. I mean, even like granting all of Logan's personality flaws and personal flaws, both, like that's not for her to say. And she should know him well enough to know he would not take kindly to that. Mm. Like he doesn't want to be put on the spot. He doesn't want to be caught out. He was not ready for that to happen. He certainly didn't think that she was going to do anything like that. And so, you know, later she's like, I think I fucked it. Like, yeah, absolutely you did. Of course.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're certainly right. A few things about the scene worth pointing out. One is I shared your, like, it's stretched on into eternity. You know, I'm just, and again, what I was bringing up earlier about how it's edited, it's like, oh, it wasn't just like Shiv drops it and then like cut away to like another scene at a different place. It's like, wow, they let that play out in excruciating detail. Like every reaction that occurs after she drops that bomb, you see on everyone's face. And yeah, it's truly agonizing. It's I'm shook after watching.
Yeah, I can remember a specific instance in my work life where I knew a coworker was about to say something like that she shouldn't. I mean, obviously in a much more low stakes situation like this, but in a meeting with a bunch of people that we didn't know well, and I could see it coming. And there probably was a moment where I could have like put a hand on her and stopped her saying what I knew she was about to say, and I didn't. And it was, and I should have, because it was a mistake.
But on some level, I agree with everything you said. Bad move on her part, et cetera, et cetera. But on some level, I kind of support what she did, because there was a scenario where, as Shiv put it, you know, she says, I think something like, fuck him for stringing me along.
Yeah.
And there was a scenario where, you know, Logan continues to play coy about it, and then like 2 years later Shiv gets screwed over, you know. She thinks she's gonna get the job and then she doesn't, right? Like that is extremely plausible. And Shiv's like, okay, I'm gonna prevent that from happening by not necessarily doing a good thing. She's short-circuiting it from the outset, but at least it's over and she can like move on with her life, you know. I don't know.
Okay, I see. Yes. I mean, if we say that her object was to end the stringing along by forcing him to be like, I take it back, then sure.
Or forcing him to do one thing or the other, because I don't think she knows that he's definitely going to refuse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or not agree. Anyway, so yeah, I think just like, hey, it might be torturous to be in a will he or won't he name her as a successor for several years, and like we can end that now, you know?
I guess, but if you're, I guess, I just feel like if that was what her thinking was, there were other ways she could have done it, like in private with him, and just said like, I'm giving him an ultimatum one-on-one that's like, our timeline is X, and if it's not, I'm going to go do something else. Whereas this is like, she embarrassed him in front of people that he's trying to impress, like the rare people ever in his life that he needs to impress very badly. And instead, she looked like a brat, and she looked like he didn't have control of her, because in that moment he didn't.
Yeah.
And the result is like, it's not, I don't think it's what she wanted. And the thing is like, the camera slowly pushes in on her. Like we see her thinking about it before she says it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And still, like, knowing everything, she still does it. Like, we've all been watching the show. We know that's not going to work on Logan.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is, whatever she wanted as the outcome, like, this is a path that feels like it will 100% lead to failure, right? Like,
absolutely.
Like, yes, there's no way this could have worked in a, it might serve to end her suspense, but yes, there's no way it's going to lead to the outcome that she wants, right?
No, yeah. Like, you can imagine a situation where she was trying to get one over with Gil Evis or something, where, you know, she pushes her luck and the response is, oh, I like your moxie, kid. You're right. But like, this is like such a bad miscalculation. It's like, it almost beggars belief that she did it. And yet at the same time, I do feel like the show earned it. Like,
oh, totally.
I understand why she, the character of Shiv, would do this. As terrible and self-sabotaging as I think it is.
Yeah, I think you're right on. Like, it didn't feel implausible to me, certainly.
Yeah, right, yes.
That she would do it. But yeah, super painful. One thing I did enjoy, though, is the fact that Kendall, like, backed her up in the moment,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, people are like, hey, Nan's family is like, it seems like you guys don't really have your shit together. And Kendall's like, no, we're good, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's really... let's just say he's very adaptable at this point in his career, right? Like, he's willing to back up whoever he thinks is going to have the most power over him. And we certainly saw that here. Also, mm-hmm. just great to see everyone's shocked reaction. Probably Roman the most shocked out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Very delightful to witness his surprise at the announcement.
Yeah.
And there is that moment afterwards when it's just Shiv and Logan left together alone in the room. Mm-hmm. And you think, like, Logan might, like, lash out at her or say something to her. But instead he's just like, well, we should get going. Which is kind of his version of saying, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Which we all know is much more crushing than if your parent actually is upset.
Yeah.
So... overall, just really exceptionally well done scene and very, very painful to watch. So,
yeah, I mean, if the way the scene is built, like, you can feel it building to this inevitable result.
Yeah.
But that knowing, I mean, even though you can see it coming, her fuck up, like, it doesn't make it easier to watch. Like, it's just like.
It's like
watching
a car crash in slow motion and like being powerless to stop it. It's rough. It's rough.
Mm.
Yeah.
So after dinner, the Roys are all miserable. Shiv knows that she screwed it up and freaks out to Tom about potential repercussions.
Yeah. Tom's really like concerned about himself at this stage too, because like, if Shiv has lost her power, then like Tom is basically like, he at least understands enough to know he is really on the outs at that point, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has no juice without her. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing about that is that even before all of this happens, Logan is like, you're going to have to be the scapegoat for news. And Tom tries to be like, shouldn't that be Sid? And it should. Sid has been around way, way longer in news than he has. But like, it's clear Logan intends to just throw Tom under the bus.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it's not going to be Sid, because Sid gets to stay.
Yeah.
You know, but Tom doesn't grok this at the time. So, humiliated into facing his sexual issues, Roman basically challenges Tabitha to have sex with him his way. He wants her to pretend to be dead and not to move or respond at all. This doesn't work out, so Roman goes to complain to Jerry, who sends him to her bathroom so she can verbally abuse him through the door while he jerks off on the other side.
So, couple thoughts. First of all, I think we're finding out a lot about Roman's sex life and what turns him on, right? Which we all know is what we wanted before this season began. And it seems like he's turned on by both necrophilia and also being humiliated. So, mm-hmm. like, I guess those two things. These necrophilia tendencies are understandably disturbing. Like, you as a typical person, you might watch this and be upset by that being his kink. But nonetheless, I did find it very heartbreaking to watch this character, who is a rich asshole, reveal his kink, his vulnerability to another human being, and get rejected so thoroughly.
Yeah, especially since we know that, you know, Tabitha is a woman of the world. Like, she's not, she's very sex positive based on what we, what we know.
Yeah.
And even like this, she's like, okay, sure. Like, she's willing to try it.
Yeah.
But then when she tries to like actually participate in it, he's like, no, you need to lie totally still. And she's like, okay, then no, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she turns on him real fast there. But yeah, mm-hmm. It's very sad, I think, even though, many people probably hate Roman as a character. I still think it's a little sad just because he has never been vulnerable to anyone, I think, until this moment. I can't even recall. Mm-hmm. When he's been this vulnerable before and like revealed part of himself to anyone. So,
but it also shows important growth. Like, you know, if this is what you really are into, then you need to find a partner who's going to be willing to take this journey with you. And if she's not, then best to, you know, cut your losses, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Also, until this episode, it actually wasn't clear to me whether or not Jerry is into her whole thing with Roman. It wasn't clear to me whether she's just doing it for the power advantage or whether she actually was genuinely turned on or romantically interested in this way. But mm-hmm. I think this episode makes it clear that she's not into it, because she kind of has this look of like an eye-rolly look while Roman's in the bathroom jerking off that indicates that she's just doing it because on some level she feels like she has to. Mm-hmm. Did you interpret it the same way?
It's hard to say because this is just another escalation of where things started with this relationship. So I feel like it's too early to judge.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
But at the same time, like, you know, as if she decides to like do a quick Google herself and find out like what a dominatrix is supposed to do, it doesn't necessarily require to her to, you know, have hands-on sex with him.
Right.
And maybe, you know, just ordering him around and telling him he's trifling, that would have its own appeal. You know, it might not be sexual at all.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that evolves, but it's definitely not something I could have predicted at the beginning of the season, that this is where the Roman storyline would end up. So.
No. Yeah. True.
So Kendall has a good time, right?
Yeah, Kendall accepts Naomi's invitation to do drugs with her, so each is as much in recovery as the other, which is to say, though both are still using, they're both convinced they're in control and in much better shape than they used to be.
They can quit anytime they want, basically, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So when they're both very high, they make out. Maybe they have sex. We don't see them with their clothes off, so it's not clear.
Yeah.
They're in a helicopter. Later, Naomi tells him how victimized she felt by Waystar tabloids' negative coverage of her worst drug misadventures, and Kendall encourages her to imagine taking the money and just walking away from this life. So is Kendall right that he's doing much better in his addiction? Well, he wakes up the next morning having literally shit the bed, so maybe not.
So a few things I want to comment on. First of all, there is a scene in this episode where Naomi says something like, I love watching you self-destruct or something like that to the Roy family, which really sums up my whole mantra with regards to this show. You know, I think mm-hmm. that's like that watching the Roy self-destruct and sabotage themselves is really what I tune in for. And so I felt like with a couple lines, she really captured what is great about Succession. Another thing to point out is I do think it's fascinating to kind of hear these two perspectives of being part of these massive families, and Kendall is now under his father's thumb forever, right? Like he can't get out even if he wants to, and he's saying to this woman, get out while you still can. And I do think that's like a very powerful message coming from him, that at this point in Naomi's life, it's still possible to get out of the situation, and she should seriously consider it, which of course she does. Finally, I enjoyed the way Kendall's wake-up scene is filmed, which from my perspective very much invokes the cinematic language of guy waking up next to new woman he slept with. I don't know if you got that feeling, especially mm-hmm. because they cut to it right after he's kind of making out with her and hanging out with her, and I'm thinking, oh, they might sleep together. He wakes up. But instead of waking up next to her, he wakes up in a pile of his own shit. And it really snaps you back from like, oh, maybe he made a meaningful connection to, nope, he's lying in a pile of his own shit. It snaps you back to the state of what his life is really like at this point. And I found that to be quite jarring and effective. So
yeah, well, I have more to say about that, but we'll get to it.
All right, let's get to it.
Connor and Maxim did get drunk together and reach a detente. Connor offered Maxim the State Department in his future presidential administration. Nan calls a meeting after breakfast. Logan, Marcia, Jerry, Shiv, and Kendall, the last of whom has to walk in shame past Rosa and her basket of his soiled bed linens. And so I've generally decided that the point of the show is that rich people get away with everything. I know earlier I was like, someone's going to leak the story of the cater waiter. Kendall's going to get caught out. I was much younger and more naive then. Now I just think the point of the show is everyone gets away with everything. But the shots of Rosa, not just this where she's holding Kendall's shitty sheets, but also earlier we see Nan go into the kitchen and pick up the roast or whatever it is and present it at the table, and everyone applauds, and Rosa sort of is hanging back in the doorway. You know, Nan did nothing for this roast. Everyone at the table knows she didn't cook it. And yet, you know, she takes credit for it. So I don't know. Those two shots of Rosa make me think I'm right. The point of the show is that nothing touches rich people.
Yeah, put it slightly different, right? That rich people, at least the ultra wealthy, get to take credit for
other people's labor.
Yeah, other people's labor, right? Like that's what the way the world is structured is that, like, hey, once you get to a certain level of power, the people who work for you's accomplishments are your accomplishments, right?
Mm-hmm. So Marcia is not, after all, in attendance when the rest of the Roy detachment learns that Naomi has apparently convinced Nan a sale is a good idea. Raya gets Logan to up his offer to $25 billion, but Nan has conditions. Some board seats, editorial protections, Tom removed as head of news, and for Logan to announce Shiv publicly as his successor. And Logan responds,
"Well, that's not quite how I do things."
"Well, it will have to be, or there's no deal. We want to announce the sale and Shiv at the same time because, frankly, she may be one of you, but she's young, she's a woman, and her politics fit better with the core values of our family business. So, that's the offer."
"Well, to be fair, you don't have an offer. I have an offer. And if I announce my daughter will be announced on my time."
"Okay. Let me explain something."
"Oh, please."
"You can't put a value on what we do."
"Funny. I have put a value on what you do."
"Well, if you won't budge, then I'm afraid we have no deal."
"Then we're done." "Would you like to hear my favorite passage from Shakespeare? Take the fucking money."
So I think we differ on this, but I feel like Nan's impression of Shiv's politics are possibly magical thinking. I don't really believe Shiv holds any principles with very much fervor. She just wants power. And she's a woman, maybe good for optics from the Pierce perspective, but it doesn't necessarily mean anything about Shiv's values, though it is consistent with whatever Nan thinks it means, capital I, capital M, that Logan's current wife is both age appropriate and not American, which Nan said earlier in the episode, Marcia is a credit to Logan, which is interesting and also kind of gross.
What do you mean by that, kind of gross?
Well, that she doesn't know anything about Marcia, presumably. I mean, we have no reason to think that the Pierces are as paranoid as the Roys and that, you know, they've had her followed or, you know, put a PI on her story to find out what her deal is. But all she knows about her is what she sees, which is she's a woman in her 50s or maybe 60s. And you know, she's not American. Marcia is not a typical trophy wife. Yeah. And so Nan, to me, like, that's part of her whole, you know, limousine liberal thing, which is like she's constructed an identity for Marcia based on very little information and used it as a, you know, a pro for Logan when she doesn't really know anything about either of them at all.
Right. So, like, put a different way, like, she's very much involved in the optics and the surface level aspects of Logan's life or Shiv's life.
Yeah, and there are token aspects to both Marcia and Shiv from Nan's perspective that, like, serve her narrative, but, you know, may not actually be based on anything.
So I disagree somewhat with your assessment just because you're saying that you don't think Shiv has any real politics. I do think Shiv is what we've seen is that she's like a pragmatist at least, and I think she understands that even strenuously objects to the Pierce deal because I think she doesn't want Pierce's company to be subsumed by ATN. She knows that that will lead to a worse news environment overall. And it seems like she doesn't have much respect for ATN's journalistic practices right now.
Right. But she's not arguing against this deal. She wants it to happen. She says in the hallway to Tom, she really, really wants it.
Oh,
even though she knows it's wrong.
That is not what I thought she was saying. I thought she was saying, I really want this, meaning I want the throne, not I want this deal.
Right. But she's not going to get the throne if this deal doesn't happen. This is what I mean. Like, by that Shiv, intellectually, she knows this deal is terrible. It's terrible for America. It's probably bad. It's definitely bad for the Pierces. It's probably bad for the Roys in the long run.
Yeah.
But because her main drive is for power, she is putting all of those in very smart intellectual objections in a box and closing it and pursuing power. That's what I mean.
Fair enough. So I guess like the small token movements that she's made towards being more liberal aren't super persuasive to you, it sounds like.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Which is, I think it's a completely reasonable position. I do think I'd rather have, you know, her in that position than, I don't know, Roman, Kendall, or Logan, like from a politics perspective. But I can accept your argument that like it's, you know, at most she's barely more liberal than her family members. And I probably agree with you that power is the number one animating force in her life. So,
yeah.
But I will say this scene felt a little bit contrived, a little bit silly to me, that it was intended obviously to generate the maximum possible dramatic impact where they basically kind of announce this ultimatum that's kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, it is like three women sitting there who are trying to advocate for putting another woman in power.
Yeah.
And like, so that on some level it makes sense, but it just feels like they are coming at it from such a position of that they feel is a position of strength when I don't know that that is their position, and Logan actually calls them out on it. He's like, well, you know, Nan says, that's the offer. And Logan says, you know,
You don't have it.
I'm the only one making an offer around here.
Right? Yeah.
So it did feel a little bit contrived that they would be like, actually, she should be the one. And we're basing this off of last night's conversation and our general feelings about Shiv.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So it's a little bit silly, but I understand why they did it, which is they wanted to put Logan, they meaning the filmmakers or the creators of the show, they wanted to put Logan in a situation where he has every reason to name Shiv as the successor, right? Like, hey, just agree to Shiv at being the successor, which is something that he theoretically already wants.
Right.
And the deal's going to go through. You're going to get everything you wanted. You're going to get everything you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing that, he refuses. Now, what was your interpretation of why he refused?
Because he'd already made up his mind. And then for them to think that they could box him in with this, no pun intended, I think just made him, it just made him more stubborn in his original position that Shiv overplayed her hand at dinner. And this isn't going to change his mind.
Interesting. Okay. I do agree Shiv overplayed her hand at dinner, but I guess the focus I had is more that Logan is not somebody that likes to be bullied, right? And
Yes.
And they're kind of like bullying him in this. They're like, you must do this or else. And it, my interpretation is, even if Logan was going to name Shiv, he would not allow it to be under these circumstances. Right?
Agree. Yes, yeah. I agree.
So, only other thing I wanted to mention is it's kind of sad that Kendall was a key part of this deal happening. Because presumably Naomi was convinced to vote yes from the conversation with Kendall, and he will likely never get credit for that. So yet another bummer for Kendall. But yeah.
True. Speaking of them, Kendall and Naomi part with a significant look by the choppers, but no further conversation. The helicopter ride home is tense as Logan and Jerry watch their phones, waiting for Nan to blink. Shiv decides this is the time to try to get some answers out of Logan.
What a weird family.
So you want to talk about him?
You want to say something? Fine.
What happened?
We good? Drive, you fucking Wally Bird!
So I think this is some great acting from Sarah Snook, who plays Siobhan. The look on her face of just complete helplessness and almost like she's on the verge of a mental breakdown is really convincing, you know, because she's been completely silent through the entire negotiation as well, and she's probably just like exploding, wanting answers. And getting nothing from Logan, like no explanation of what Logan's mindset was, why he refused to name her successor, even though he had every reason to do so. It's a great performance, and she's my MVP this year so far. So,
yeah, even in the meeting, you're right. She doesn't say anything, but every time they show her, she looks like she's desperately trying not to cry.
Yeah.
And when Nan says they want Logan to name Shiv as his successor publicly, like the look on her face, it just feels like, oh, this doesn't help. Like she looks like this just makes things worse.
Oh,
like
interesting.
To me, it's like she's definitely surprised, but I don't think she thinks that this is going to change anything.
Oh, that was not my take on it. Yeah. My take on it was that like she was. She's like, oh, like, you know, you've now thanks, Nan, you've now completely paved the way for Logan to open his mouth and officially name me, you know?
Yeah.
And there's this, like, excitement that is then completely destroyed by Logan's reaction to things. So,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's a rich performance because you can read into it basically whatever you want. She's like the Ryan Gosling of performances.
Yeah, the whole point of her position this season is all the ambiguity in it. And I feel like this is what we've been talking about since the premiere, which is like wanting something that is bad to want, you know, like wanting something that you know is going to corrupt you, wanting something that can't possibly really make you happy because you can see all the other members of the family that aren't happy that have had it or thought they were going to have it in Kendall's case. You know what I mean? Like, this is the struggle for Shiv is like, there's one path to winning in this family. And yet there's so much about it that's unappealing really.
Yeah. Astutely observed, Tara. And I think the idea of wanting something that is so treacherous to want as well. Mm-hmm. I know you hinted at this, right? But just like entangling yourself with Logan Roy in a succession struggle, it generally ends badly for people. And Shiv probably had to know that to some degree when she set down this path.
Yeah.
My wife, who kind of watches the show glancingly with me earlier on when we were watching early in the season and, you know, Shiv was named a successor. She's like, just because of the fact that Shiv is the smartest person and probably best suited for this job, I know that this show is just going to completely fuck her over. And I don't want to see Shiv get fucked over. And I think that's what's exactly what's going to happen. And it seems like she was right. So
it sure does. So as soon as he has stepped off the chopper, Logan gets a call from Rhea.
Yeah? Uh-huh. That's goddamn fucking right!
And finally, Gregory is what he wants to be called from now on, shows up at Logan and Marcia's place for the not especially celebratory celebration. As Logan himself says,
money wins.
And Logan sends us into the closing credits after locking eyes with Shiv, raising his eyebrows at her, and silently letting her know he knows she overplayed her hand.
Yeah, brutal look he gives her at the end. So much communicated without any words. It yep. is really pretty great. But this episode, I mean, I think it is a great episode, like one of my favorites, in the sense that it made me feel something, and that something was extreme discomfort. And
it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always amazed when any show can make me feel something this acutely. But I feel like, first of all, it feels like a great mini arc, just like season one, episodes 1 through 6, where I felt like a great kind of mini arc for that season. Mm-hmm. I think this season, like, episode 1 through 5 is like a great mini arc for Shiv. And you could watch just these 5 episodes and be like, yeah, that was like the whole story, you know?
Yeah.
But it leaves me with a lot of questions. Like, you know, at this point, we've now seen 2 of Logan Roy's children vie for the throne after being encouraged to do so by Logan himself. And then they get thwarted by Logan. So, like, what will drive the show forward at this point? If Shiv and probably Kendall are out of contention, like, is it an outsider? Are we going to have Roman and Connor wars? Here's a question for you, Tara, if you're going to make a prediction. Do you think Shiv is, like, totally out of the game at this point?
I mean, I think that Logan is starting to have a renaissance of his belief in Kendall.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, granted, Kendall started a very low point in the season premiere, for the reasons that we've been saying all along, you know, killing a guy. But since then,
chestnut.
But since then, Kendall has really done exactly what Logan wanted him to and helped keep all of Logan's plans on track. And not in ways that are invisible either. So I don't know that Kendall is necessarily to be counted out.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think you're right about that because, like, these have been the best days of Kendall's career at Waystar Royco. You know,
yeah.
Like, he's been the most effective. He's been the most honest. You know, murdering someone really did something for his self-esteem, I think.
All right, look, it's manslaughter. Let's not be inflammatory. It's bad enough without using wrong terminology.
Fair enough. Manslaughter really did a lot for his career growth, I think. And yeah. So, I do think Kendall is actually potentially in the mix again. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, is Shiv completely out? I don't want to believe it, Tara, because, as I've mentioned, I think Shiv is the most competent and the person I'm rooting for. But really hard to see how she comes back from this one, you know? Really hard to see it.
I don't even necessarily believe that she's the most competent anymore. I mean, she...
Yeah.
You've been saying all season that she wasn't impressing you. She has not come through this in a very impressive way.
I think that's fair enough. Well, speaking of people who impress or don't impress us, why don't we get to winners and losers of the week? Every week on The Sweet Smell of Succession, we choose a winning Roy, a losing Roy, a winning non-Roy, and a losing non-Roy. So, Tara, who is our winning Roy for this week?
Logan Roy. He overcame the odds, got exactly what he wanted, didn't end up having to make any of the concessions he was asked to, and money wins.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that reaction he has when he gets that phone call stepping off the helicopter is probably the most triumphant we have seen Brian Cox in this role. And it is a moment when he's celebrating the power of money, and I think it's very appropriate for that character. So, Logan Roy, winning Roy of the week. Actually, Tara, I do want to take us down a brief detour. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast before, but I read this profile of the people who make the show in The Hollywood Reporter before this season began. Mm-hmm. And one thing I thought was interesting was, you know, the actors are trained by, like, I don't know, a rich person etiquette coach or whatever, or like someone who's an expert in rich people. And one thing that they said was, when you get off a helicopter or when you approach a helicopter, don't duck. Because a rich person or a billionaire would already have done that action like 100 times and would know, like, you have nothing to fear from the helicopter blades overhead. And I did enjoy watching the Roys kind of get out of and into helicopters like very nonchalantly this episode. So just wanted to point out a random, I meant to bring this up earlier, but wanted to point that out before we wrapped up the show. Anyway.
Yep.
So winning Roy is Logan. Losing Roy this week, I think it's pretty obvious, Tara, but who's your losing Roy?
Of course, it's Shiv. She fucked it.
Yep. well put, Tara.
Well, I mean, that's how she puts it, and she's right.
Yep. I don't think anything more needs to be said about that. Nope. Okay. Winning non-Roy. Who is the winning non-Roy this episode?
Rhea somehow threaded the needle. She kept the trust of both the Pierces and the Roys. Did she successfully get Nan's requirements built into the deal? She did not. But other than that, I mean, at the 11th hour, she got an extra $1 billion out of the Roys, and that's not nothing.
A billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon, this is going to add up some real money.
Yep.
There is a great moment when she says, I think it's undervalued. And Logan goes up to 25, and she says, well, then, with a heavy heart, I have to say, we accept the deal. You know, like, I mean, it's just a lovely moment where it's something she has to say, but not something that she necessarily feels. And it's difficult, I think, for an actor to play fake sincerity.
Yeah, but I'll also say she pushed for what she knew she could get. Nan pushed and did not get anything she wanted. So Rhea is definitely the better gamesman.
Well, I'm going to put out a different winning non-Roy, and that is Naomi, who was able to presumably get a huge chunk of the $25 billion and get out from under these people forever, not need to deal with any of these people ever again. And there's this moment in – you ever see the movie Drive, the Nicholas Winding Refn movie with Ryan Gosling? One of my favorite moments from that movie is when Ryan Gosling wants to give the money back to the people he's accidentally stole it from, and he tries to negotiate a drop off, and the guy says to him, well, what do you get out of it? And he says, just that out of it. And that's kind of what I feel about Naomi in this episode, is she gets out of it. You know, she doesn't, if she wants to, she doesn't have to deal with these people ever again. And it is really interesting to reflect on the idea of, like, that there's this whole thing with ATN covering her addiction that we don't see. It's referred to in the show, but we don't ever see it. And how complicated that must be, right? Because on the one hand, if you accept their deal, you're extracting massive quantities of money from them. But on the other hand, if you accept their deal, you're also allowing these people who made your misery much worse to kind of take over your family's legacy. And that must be pretty confusing. But overall, I think it's better that she accepted the money. It's probably what I would have done in her situation. So, which I expect to happen to me at some point. So, the money, not the drugs.
Sure.
So, winning non-Roy for me is Naomi. Losing non-Roy, Tara Ariana, what do you think?
Well, I've gone with poor Rosa, who has to literally clean up after Kendall and his poopy misadventures.
just for that reason, not because, I mean, also all the other stuff you mentioned, right? Not being able to have drinks with the guests and having her roast credit stolen from her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think at this point that she cares about that. I mean, someone who is in this position obviously expects that Nan is going to take credit for it. I don't think she's standing in the doorway in that shot because she's mourning the roast that she didn't get to present to the guests. I just think this is part of the job. But I don't think that she expected, when this crowd of adults showed up at Turnhaven, that the next day she was going to be throwing away Kendall's sheets and possibly the mattress.
Yep. I think I can agree with you there. I actually chose a different losing on Roy. I chose Nan, who was unable to make her, you know, century-old company into a viable business, forced to kind of submit to Logan Roy's suboptimal offer, and likely will see her family's legacy get destroyed as the Pierce company is subsumed by ATN. So I think even though she got $25 billion out of it, as Connor Roy once wisely put it in season one of Succession, any sucker can have a few million bucks. What these people have is influence and power. They are somebody, and now they won't be anymore. And I think that is going to be a rough bargain for Nan, years from now. So anyway, that's my my losing Don Roy. So sure. That's going to bring us to the end of this episode of The Sweet Smell of Succession. I think overall, we really thought this was a well-done episode, and I'm just so curious, like, what are the plot lines going to be for not only the rest of season two, but for season three? Like, we've already seen two people go up against Logan and fail. Like, can that just continue happening? Like, how are they going to, you know, how are they going to keep it interesting now that Shiv might be out of the mix, right?
I assume at this point we go back to the proxy war, and that those kind of power struggles are probably what's going to animate the rest of the season. So, you know, more Stewie, that's always good.
I think also, like, the idea of a merger between ATN and Pierce, or Waystar Royco and Pierce, is probably going to create some legal issues, some operational issues that we'll get some insight into it as the season rolls on, is my guess. So,
yep.
Anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening. Find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Until next week, Tara Ariana, where can we find more of your work on the internet?
Well, you can follow us at Succession Pod on Twitter, where you can also see GIFs from the episode that I lovingly made just for you. But you can also find me every week on Again With This, a Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place podcast, and on Extra Hot Great, a podcast.
At extrahotgreat.com.
Yes.
I do a podcast where I interview people about interesting topics at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Be sure to check that out. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.